Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Everything Everywhere All at Once has been on a tear this award season, winning the PGA, DGA, and SAG top awards. It's up for 11 Oscar nominations, and we're here today talking to Ryan Lott of Sun Lux. They're nominated for Best Original Score and their song This Is a Life from the film with David Byrne and Mitski on Crew Call. So, this is the second feature score for Sun Lux. Tell me about winning this project and also breaking from your tour schedule to devote all your time to composing it.
Yeah, hey, thank you. Good question. And I'm glad you asked because there is a difference between the first feature and the second feature. The first Sun Lux feature was for a film called Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby with James McAvoy and Jessica Chastain. I created that score before Sun Lux was a band. So this is the first feature film that we scored as a band, which I think another thing that's kind of amazing about that is that we are the first band in history to be nominated for Best Original Score for an Oscar. There was a band called the Beatles about half a century ago that was nominated for a similar award, a song score award, but that award is no longer around. And that year there was a separate original motion picture score, you know, traditional score award. So, I don't know, just an interesting tidbit.
The first film I was talking about was Mean Dreams in 2016.
Mean Dreams. Okay. So Mean Dreams, I also did as a solo project. That was a smaller Canadian film. Super, super cool movie. And I'm very proud of that score. Also a solo endeavor. That was like really right as the band was transitioning from being part of just the live universe of Sun Lux and becoming and altering the DNA of Sun Lux from, you know, and you know, as a studio project as well. So Sun Lux is now the three of us. So this is our first score as a band.
Tell me about landing the gig. You guys were on this film well before any cast. Did you know the Daniels for quite some time?
No, we didn't know them at all. They were fans of our music, both individually and collectively as a band. So they hit us up because they had been dreaming for a while at that time. This was September 2019. And by that point, they had already been dreaming up approaching us to score it and had been planning certain songs for different scenes and kind of planning their approach to us, to their pitch, which was obviously an incredible honor to hear and also totally strange. And it only became stranger when we actually read the script, which if that version of the movie had been made would have been a 4-hour film. Imagine an even crazier, even longer, even stranger journey.
Was it thematically a different movie?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. It was just a more exploded universe with more tangents, a multiverse with more tangents and subplots and characters like Spaghetti Baby, Noodle Boy, things like that that didn't quite make it into the movie. Maybe for the better. I don't know. We'll see. You know, I'm sure there'll be a very long extended cut at some point in our future.
So tell me about the aesthetic here for the score. There's a lot of strings. There's the soft and there is the loud. And yet it's an upside down classical at times.
Mm-hmm.
It's funky, but it gets, you know, when it can get emotional classical and then stand on its head. Tell me about that. How did you guys come up with that? Or were did the Daniels let you go free rein, or did they have this sound in mind?
You know, the Daniels have a remarkable ability to balance both a very focused directorial approach with a completely permission-giving energy. I'm not quite sure how they did it, to be honest. I think at the heart of making it work was the fact that they chose their collaborators wisely. I think they were really smart about, you know, I think they chose the right composer team, of course. I might be a little biased, but I truly think that they understood better the potential of our collaboration with them than even we did at the outset. We were just really excited to be involved, and we love the idea that we can do so many different kinds of things. And we are a multiverse band. You know, we are a composer team that inside of each of us is kind of a multiverse. And they heard that within our music. They heard, they also heard a kind of emotional energy in our music that is melancholic and full of gravitas, while at the same time being architectural and quite cerebral at times, you could say. And I think they knew that was the film they were going to make. It was going to be a rigorous architectural film, full of surprise and intense emotional energy. We couldn't quite see that at the outset. You know, we knew that this was going to be incredible if it was ever going to be made. And for me, when I read the script, I was like, nobody's ever going to make this movie. but they knew it. They knew it. They knew what they needed, and they heard it in our music. And they felt the potential of our collaboration in a deeper way than we did, even at the outset. And I think the process of scoring this was a process of discovering just how right that decision was. So yes, they gave us completely free rein. We were, as you said, involved very early in the process, which meant that we could actually help inform their outlook as they looked forward to the shoot. And then we could inform how the edit came together. And as music directors, music video directors, they are naturally quite deferential to music and to understanding the way that an edit supports music and not just the other way around. Which also made the collaboration very unique and very different than most film music partnerships. Usually, almost always, the music is chasing the edit and never the other way around. And there were plenty of times when, I mean, really again and again, they would say, you know, let us know where we can, you know, adjust the edit to make them so you don't have to do any fudging the music. You know, we can make the music sound really right. They knew that they wanted a film that felt musical and an edit that felt musical. That's an amazing insight, I think, that they had as well.
Sometimes composers are writing to the script. Sometimes composers are just getting sequences. How did it all come to you? Did you get one rough cut?
Yeah, we started writing as soon as we debriefed after reading the scripts. Daniel shared some fantastic, incredibly crazy ideas. And we thought most of them were not going to work, and all of them did work. honestly, the best ideas with respect to the approach in the score was were their ideas. We just got to work, man. We were just so excited. And actually, now that I think about it, we were in the studio when we were working on raw materials for what would become our triple album, Tomorrow's 1, 2, and 3, which we made at the same time as we made this score somehow.
Oh my God.
So we were in the studio developing raw tools, which is part of our process, is we develop the ingredients first. Like we stock our pantry with like really good stuff. And then we come up with the recipes that we want to make from those raw ingredients, which is quite different, I think, than most, the way most people work. Certainly the way kind of most, you know, pop or bands work. And I wouldn't call us necessarily a pop band, but we are making experimental pop music. In the way that this movie is an experimental pop movie. So they contact us and we were in the middle of the studio kind of mindset and all together, which was also rare. We only really come together to record and for special occasions. So we actually started immediately, even before reading the script, just from talking to them, to developing sounds and gestures and crazy ideas based on concepts and events that we knew were going to be part of the film. So from there all the way through to the very last day of the film mix we were composing, which is also totally rare.
Have you guys always been remote? Or did the pandemic force you that to be that way?
No, yeah, we were actually remote. We were all spread out well in advance of the pandemic. And just life took us into different places. And we would always just come together to tour and to record, as I said. So that actually meant we were kind of uniquely poised to, you know, to seize the opportunity we had with respect to space and, like, you know, mental space and also temporal space to develop this score, because we had worked those muscles already and we developed a process as a team of working over long distance.
Tell me about how David Byrne and Mitski became involved with the song.
Yeah. So the film studio, A24, I don't quite know what happened, but my guess is, it seems like what happened was A24 finally saw this film coming together, coming off of the page and into an edit. And I think that they kind of started to look around at each other and I think they started to realize what they had on their hands was something truly special. And, you know, this...
That I know.
This would have been after it was shot primarily. Maybe there were some pickups because the production was stopped a day shy of wrap, which means they had a full day of filming that they had planned that they couldn't do. And they had to then do over the course of, they had to like wait like 9 months and then do a skeleton cruise and green screen and like different parts of the world and stuff just to finish. But before that was all done, you know, there was a rough assembly of the film that was, you know, you could tell that it was going to be really crazy great, you know? And they got it enough that they knew that they wanted to invest more in it. And when everything is shot pretty much, and all the, you know, there's one of the things you can do late in the game to squeeze all the juice out of the thing is to invest more in the music. No, that didn't mean they gave us more money. but it did mean that they expressed willingness to invest in collaborators that we thought maybe could be, you know, they could enhance the score and so we immediately went about writing a list of some of the people we would dream to work with. And David Byrne, of course, was on that list. Andre Benjamin was on that list as a flute player, not as a rapper.
Uh-huh.
Mitski was on that list. Randy Newman was on that list. Everyone that we invited to be involved immediately said yes. They saw the early cut of the movie and they said yes on the strength of the film. You know, it wasn't because we were like some hotshot band. It was because this movie was fantastic and they knew it. They just wanted to be a part of it.
With David, again, he's everywhere. He's everywhere, everything, all at
I know.
Bizarre. But he specifically, you could see it in his filmography. He specifically chooses which films he's going to work on. It's very, very clear. It's got to speak to him. So this is, that's amazing.
Yeah, he said it. He said it. He said it, called it astonishing and said it turned his head around. So.
Wow.
So he said, sign me up. Now, we reached out to Mitski first, though. And the reason why we reached out to Mitski was because I think at the end of 2020, Daniel Kwan sent us his Spotify year-end like top three artists. And the first two were Ryan Lott, that's me, and Sun Lux. That's my band with my brothers. And that, you know, makes sense because obviously, you know, we're making a movie together and he's always listening to songs to find out where they could fit in the movie, if anything. In the end, basically, it was all original score. But the original idea was that there would be a lot more just existing music that was, adapted. The pandemic gave us the latitude to develop a fully bespoke score. Anyway, so he sent it to us as a sort of like, love you, you know. But the third person on that list was Mitski. And he wasn't making a movie with Mitski. So that was truly his heartthrob listen, right? So we said to ourselves, oh, snap. End credit song. We got to reach out to Mitski. So we pitched that idea to them. And of course, they were like, yeah, let's try. And through their channels, reached out to her, sent her the early cut. And it would have been early. Immediately, she was like, let's go. Let's do it. So we got on Zoom. We talked about the potential of it. And just everybody said, yay, let's do something. Who knows what it's going to be. And then we just kind of put that idea aside for later. And then in my mind, I was thinking, this song needs to be a duet at some point in the process of scoring this film. And now there's over 100 music cues in this film, which is totally bananas. It's so much music. It's an hour and 50 minutes of original music, and it's only a 2 hour and 12 minute film. You know, so it's just constant. Like, there's basically the Rocks universe.
What was the philosophy behind that? You know, studios have a very specific philosophy about score and where score should be. But tell me about that. What was the, was it just because there's nonstop action, there's nonstop score?
This movie is intentionally, I hesitate to say too much, but it is designed to be, in a sense, too much. This is an overwhelmed character who, our lead character, played by Michelle Yeoh, our queen, Evelyn, is overwhelmed. She has too many things coming at her, even in one universe, to know how to cope with them. But it is maybe that unique ability to sense everything everywhere all at once that gives her this ability to, and this need to jump into alternate versions of herself, that each one better than hers. She is living her worst life in all of the thousands, the infinite multiverse. So this movie is dense. You know, it's designed to be that way. It's everything everywhere all at once, and it goes hard in that direction. And to that, you know, with that in mind, it only makes sense that music and sound design accompanies the entire film. We are designing, and it's also really important that because we spend so little time in each multiverse or in each universe, usually, we have to get into the emotion and the feeling and the look and the sound of that universe quickly. And so we are verse jumping, switching gears, contorting constantly. And as we do, we're getting there quickly, which means we need music to support those transitions. And all the while, we need to develop melodic threads, motifs that recur and make us feel, remind us that this is one film. These are themes that that weave through the chaos, and they tear our heart out, and they make us cry, smile, and, you know, all of it, you know, by the end. It has to be very emotional. And that was there were a lot of tasks for music, and so there was a lot of music.
For the song, how did it come about that Mitski would lead the vocal and David would be the backup, which is very clever?
Yeah, thank you. So I originally conceived of a song. I hadn't started writing it, but just on a philosophical level, that was sort of a celebratory dance party kind of vibe. You know, you'll forgive me if when David Byrne was thumbs up on it, that I was walking around my neighborhood thinking of dancey anthems with, you know, the characteristic shout sing of David Byrne. But when we got on the first call, David said, one of the first things he said is, you know, after all of that we've seen and all the chaos, at the end of the day, this song is about reconciliation, about family, about love, forgiveness, kindness. And for the end credits, we need to sit in that warm embrace of where we're left after all of that. And I think it should be something quite tender. And as soon as he said that, it sort of corrected my thinking on it. And I realized, oh yeah, he's totally right. He's totally right. And I shifted from sort of a dance anthem, crowd sing mentality into like an idea for a duet that sounds like it could be two songs from two different perspectives sung at the same time against a constant or a shared instrumental through line. And so to begin the process, I just sat at the piano and I said, I'll just write a song that breathes in a way that would welcome a secondary voice, and I'll write the first voice, knowing that you know, if she wanted, Mitski could write her own top line. And we could just keep the instrumental, or we could trash it all. We'll see what they say. And this is one of those moments where that is so rare, but it happens every once in a while. And it feels like being struck by lightning, made of rainbows or something. I don't remember writing the song because it came so fast. I have voice memos, proof that I did it on a certain day at a certain time. And they're a few minutes apart. And one of them is a very raw sketch. And one of them is the song that's done. and it just came. It just came so fast. And I just sent the rough sketches over to them. And they both loved it. Mitski said... she actually gave me probably one of the best compliments, because I was writing with her in mind to sing it, but you never know. And she said, I smiled the whole time because I knew I could kill it. And that's not, I don't think that's her bragging. That's her saying to me, you wrote a song from your imagination that will sound great in my instrument, and I'm going to feel great about it, you know? And so that was my goal. So, and then David set about the harder task, in my opinion, which was taking what is a very fixed piece of music with holes, and his task was to fill those holes according to the concept I had laid out, which also involved like little tent post moments where of unison, where I wanted them to come together, and then a second final section where they were singing in harmony. Because it was inherently prescriptive, it was a harder task. But man, he immediately came about. I mean, I don't know how much time he spent alone, but when he came back to us with his demo, it was so good. I mean, it was like it came across. The reason why I felt like it felt like destiny is it came across like his, to my ear, it came across like his part came first. That's how natural it felt, you know, because the next day when I woke up, I wasn't singing the song that I had written that I'd been listening to and over again. I woke up singing his melody, you know.
70 years old. What's amazing, I was thinking about this today. His voice sounds like he was a teenager. Not many performers can keep their voice up to their zenith, you know, of you know, when they first broke through. And it's amazing to hear him. He's perfect.
And he's such a great guy. You know, he's working on this song with them. You know, we get on Zoom calls, and he was always he's so studious. You know, he takes notes, and he's so cooperative. He's you know, on email, he was always so humble. You know, let me know what you think. I can change the lyrics, and he was open. We had a couple very small suggestions, and he was completely open to hearing them and invited those ideas. And for a legend who, you know, spent years on Broadway a couple times, who has an Oscar of his own, among, you know, and that's just the start, of course, his discography and the way in which the sound of his ideas has permeated our way of life, you know, and not just in the United States. For a legend like this, to take the approach of a student, really, continuing to just try to make something really good, and submit to a greater vision, to cooperate without ego, that's the dream, right? That's who you want to be when you grow up. So I admire him so much.
What is next for Sun Lux? Either on the album side or in film scoring?
Well, we are now, you know, in a place where we can, you know, we have some decisions to make for sure. And we are, you know, honored and humbled to, you know, be in a position where we'll have, you know, options. And we can, you know, receive opportunities and design our own path. And I think that I recognize that is a privilege that's not afforded to everyone. And it's a privilege that's not usually commensurate with ability, and you know, there's far more talent than there is opportunity. So I do recognize that we're very fortunate. What that means for us right now, we're still deciding. I do know that 2 days after the Oscars, we go on tour. So we wake up after hopefully partying quite a bit, and slide into 2 days of rehearsal and then get on a plane to Europe. and travel around in a van playing, you know, venues in Europe. That's the immediate future for us. So after that, for scoring, of course, we are going to do more scoring. We love to do it. I'm working on a film already, which is a film by Ned Benson, who created my first feature. The film that I scored was my first feature film, Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby. So he's my buddy, and we're going to do another one together, which I'm really excited about. It's called Greatest Hits, The Greatest Hits. But for us as a team, a scoring team, we'll see. It's going to be fun, whatever it is.
Ryan Lott, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Crew Call podcast on Deadline. I'm your host, Anthony D'Alessandro. Make sure you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode.